Welcome back to the Blindsiders. I am Ben, and I'm joined by Brian to talk about episode number 10 of Survivor 45. And we got another Blindside episode. It's we talk about the strategy here, but I think there's a segment of people that are turning on the season, but I'm not one of them. I'm still full steam ahead, pro Survivor 45 so far. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Brian?
Yeah, well, I think you and I on this show have accepted a few weeks ago now that Bellow's just a completely, like, lost cause. Mm-hmm. There's no way that they're ever going to work together. So there's no real, like, when there's conversations between the three remaining Bellows of, like, oh, let's work together, let's try something. For me, I was like, this is not going to happen. So I didn't get my hopes up. I think maybe people are getting their hopes up.
Yeah, I think that it's been very clear for a while that the only people who can beat Reba or the Reba Whore at this point are the Reba Four. So, you know, it's just going to be a matter of when they start cannibalizing themselves. Maybe next week, maybe, you know, they don't cannibalize themselves and they do rock to the final four. I think it's probably more likely that they cannibalize themselves before the final four, but who knows? Yeah, I guess we could start out the episode here. Was there anything really major from before the reward challenge that you want to cover?
I'm trying to think of anything before the reward challenge.
Yeah, it was just like kind of a lot of setup conversations. You know, Emily talked to Keturah and Bruce on the beach about how the Reba Four are half of the tribe, and you know, maybe we got to do something about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, not much. Just like you said, just set up for later. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think starting with the reward challenge and from then on, you know, they had a lot of fun editing this episode, if nothing else.
Yeah. I think that's something that I noticed. Like, this was a very, like, the season's obviously been very Emily heavy. She's been, like, one of the largest characters in the new era by a lot. This episode was, I would say, one of her biggest episodes even in the season. Like, she's definitely the dominant player and character. We get a lot of what was going on this round from her POV. I think the biggest thing that I noticed that got, like, semi-highlighted but not really, like, shoved in our faces was, like, the amount of times that Emily would play, like, information broker between different people who weren't working together. Without really, like, getting caught. And this is when it started at the start of the episode and then continues through all the way. And in an episode where multiple people got caught with their pants down, like, that's kind of something that to point out and to keep in mind.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, in this pre-reward segment, was this when Bruce was like, I'm going to come up with a plan to lie, and I'm going to tell Jake because I know Jake will tell on me.
Yeah, this is kind of important because, you know, it does come out at the post reward challenge. You know, when they're on the girls' night. You know, I personally thought the, like, core of this idea was okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that Keturah really, you know, probably projected her hatred of Bruce and like, you know, Bruce's, like, general inability to play the game across the board onto this specific move. And he was like, you know, Bruce can't be, you know, I think she didn't want to admit that Bruce, like, you know, was like, outsmarted her for a moment. Mm-hmm. And so she was, like, trying to, like, you know, put it down to dissuade that idea. But yeah, for some reason, I think that Bruce decided to tell Keturah that this was his plan. I guess in theory you need at least somebody in on the plan with you to be able to pull off the move, right? You need somebody else, like, voting with you. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't think that Bruce really had the right read on things fully in terms of Keturah's lack of loyalty to him. Maybe he would have been better off pulling off this move solo.
It reminded me a little bit of in Gabon when Bob was, like, pitching the lie of the fake idol to Corinne, and then he came clean. But only if Corinne hated Bob. That was the rehashing. Because in Gabon, Corinne was like, oh, yeah, like, that was good. Like, I believed you totally. This one, it didn't really work out like that at all.
Yeah, and I mean, Bob also had other allies and other, you know, paths towards the end game that Bruce for sure did not have. Like, he had Bob had options. Like, ultimately, you know, talk about Bob as much as you want as a winner, but he was very good at, like, keeping social options open. And obviously, like, his relationship with Sugar was a part of that, and, like, allowing him to outlive the rest of the Onion Alliance.
I guess we're saying Bruce and Bob are like opposite end of the social game spectrum.
Exactly. I wouldn't say like Bob's social game is like a lead or anything, but like he definitely like he had way more rope to play with on Gabon than Bruce ever did for a minute, even like a single molecule of a minute on the season.
Yeah, and you know what, Bob's fake idol pretty much looks like the real idols now, so that's something too. I was so disappointed when Bruce pulled that out, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot it looks like shit now.
It looks like the thing that you cut off of your tribe flag to like use as a fake idol.
Like, honestly, like when Dale in San Juan del Sur took the thing off of the water well, the little medallion, that looks better than the idols they currently use now.
Yeah.
And that was 100%. Just set dressing.
Yeah. I guess that's what they want though, because they want people in their minds to be like, oh, maybe it's fake, you know, and they want like they want more like, you know, fucking sick moments, I guess. It hasn't really paid off that way, but you know, it's the idea, I think.
One trick to last season, right?
I guess like, you know, you have like the end game of Edge of Extinction kind of.
Right.
Yeah. But either way, regardless, you know, Bruce is basically throwing a Hail Mary at this point. He realizes that you can't like, you know, win out challenges. Even though he like got close, you know, almost won the immunity for a third time in a row. And that like he would have to make some kind of play in order to like gain a footing into an endgame and to even like potentially have a chance at winning a jury vote, especially because even his like supposed number one ally who got blindsided seems to be actively rooting against him. I don't know. What were your thoughts on the play at least? Outside of, you know, telling Katora, like the idea of like faking that you gave your idol away and went home with somebody else.
I think it's fine. I think it's something, right? You know, he tried something. I think it's believable in the new era too. We've seen people going home with idols in pockets and people lying about people going home with idols in pockets. So it's, you know, it's all up in the air here because of the stupid knowledge is power.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the reverse of the lie that Jesse pulled off, right, in 43, where Jesse did the opposite, and he, I guess it's not really the opposite, but it's kind of, like, tangential to the same idea, where Jesse, like, also had an idol that everyone thought had gone home in somebody else's pocket.
In Dwight's pocket, right?
Yeah. Definitely an interesting play, and I think the, like, in theory, if he had like full committed to it and not trusted Katura with the real information, then maybe it works. They probably still for safety split the votes on Jake anyways. So like it might not have like fully paid off, but at least it was a try at something, which is like more than the majority of Bella has done this post-merge. So
yeah, no, for sure. Desperate Hail Mary, like you said.
All right, and we get the reward challenge. We have the, you know, what I would say is like, you know, maybe like a 4 out of 10 on like an older school season of Survivor in terms of reward, but on like a modern season is like a 9 out of 10 reward because they get to stay overnight.
Sanctuary.
Yeah, where good things happen. Yeah,
Jeff will do everything he can to make that a thing.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Like Fetch.
Yeah, it's like Fetch. Yeah, Survivor version of Fetch. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, it looks like a really nice time, and it looks like good food, and I'm sure sleeping in the sanctuary is better than sleeping in the shelter back there. I don't know if they had beds or anything, but, you know, even probably like a well-made floor is better than an uneven shelter.
Yeah, it is maybe like a, is the sanctuary just like the leftover of the stuff that Sandra and Rob pretended to sleep in?
Yeah. That would be more interesting, honestly. They just kept that.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a permanent structure that Boston Rob definitely built all on his own without any help from production.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Definitely, you know. Didn't bring in like the art department to do, and then like not even sleep in actually.
Everything was up to code by Rob building it himself too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. People forget he used to be a contractor. You know,
he
used to work in construction.
That's true. He made he made one of the greatest shelters ever in All Stars, and then on Winners at War, he said, "Why don't we all just sleep on the beach, guys? I don't really feel like." Building a shelter. I just spent 30 days supposedly building one in the last season.
Yeah. So I guess, I guess the letters from home were nice. They're probably the only like time in modern Survivor where you get like that. And I guess like an actual family visit.
I was thinking about this last night. Is the family visit just dead now?
I felt like after COVID calmed down a bit, they probably would have brought it back, but
maybe they were like, "Oh, we can save some money on flying people out." So
yeah, they didn't even do the maybe they'll still do it to come. I can't remember if they in the previous seasons, but they didn't even do like the weird like projecting the videos onto the rocks.
Yeah, but, you know, they've really cut the budget at this point.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess like that's, you know, it's an interesting one to do the family letters when you're winning a challenge, as Emily does here, because oftentimes it can have like social ramifications. We've seen in the past, at the very least, where like not taking somebody in a normal reward is like, you know, like you're upset for like maybe an hour and you get over it, but like not taking somebody on the like reward where you get letters from home. Like kind of stings a little bit more, but yeah, I didn't really seem to have that much ramification for Emily.
Yeah. And I think like, you know, bringing like the oldest woman, and leaving like the three young guys, like I think young guys are the least like, oh my God, I need this letter from home. You know, it's usually people who have like families, like, you know, kids and spouses at home who care more about it.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think like, you know, I think that like I think Julie was pretty much the obvious like first pick off the bench. Obviously like Emily doesn't really have a relationship with Bruce, but like from an objective standpoint, you know, you'd think like pick Bruce. He's also he's a dad. I could hear from his wife and kid. But like, you know, obviously Emily and Bruce don't have a great rapport, and she kind of wanted to do like a ladies' night thing. But yeah, I thought something that was interesting to me was this was like the first time it really hit me that like Emily seems to be kind of just like universally loved by everyone.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if this was like, this felt like very like core, like maybe I'm like just huffing copium here because I'm a big Emily stan and wants to see Emily win.
Right. But
this felt like kind of coronation episode-y to me where...
I agree. Yes.
Yeah.
Which now, like, because the winners have been kind of like hard to place, I'm like, is this a coordination or are they just leading us to like be fools? You know?
Yeah. But like, you know, she wins the challenge and everyone makes like a very big deal out of it and is like congratulating her and like hugging her and patting her on the back. And even the people that she doesn't pick seem to be like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. It was an interesting moment to me because I didn't really like conceptualize until this episode like how like kind of rock solid her social game is on this merge tribe.
Yeah, and this episode really was about her like, you know, getting Bruce out is her move. It's not mm-hmm. the Reba Fors move. So, like, if she does get to the end with, like, say, Drew and Austin, mm-hmm. she at least has that to differentiate herself of, like, I didn't just ride their coattails in any way. I was doing my own thing, you know, and this just happened to be the best way to get to the end for me. But, like, I still eliminated Bruce and his idol to take out that potential threat to me.
Yeah, and like as I mentioned before, with some of the information brokering, she's like very actively sabotaging the jury management that some of the Reba Four are trying to do while yeah. like maintaining her own jury management right. as she's like helping the Reba Four kind of vote these people out. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and what's even more interesting is that the Reba Four have been so sloppy to the point like they have to go to the end with each other. I don't know if they will.
Oh yeah.
But like they're burning. I mean, they burnt Bello twice now badly. So it's like, you know, you've lost five jury votes, but if you go to the end all Reba, then that doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it is interesting. So I don't like it does feel to me like there is this Cold War that's been brewing, and we see like the Austin and Dee relationship in the middle potentially acting as glue, but I do think there is going to come a point, and I think that this episode started planting like small seeds for it, where like Drew and Julie are going to try to each take each other out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, they are the two in that four that seem least in sync, so it makes sense that they would want to get rid of each other.
Yeah, and especially with Austin having two idols to cover the next three eliminations, like it feels like he's probably locked into the final four, and like maybe he's the winner, maybe he's in the final three and wins, maybe he's in the final three and loses, maybe he loses Fire, but it would take probably a huge blindside or like a big really misconfiguration for him to not make final four, I think, at this point.
Yeah, no, agreed. And some of, like, you know, I've heard, or rather I've seen people online talk about, like, fire making's terrible. I think we've well established that. But, like, reinforcing the fact that it's terrible is, like, this Reba 4 could potentially just get to 4 and be like, well, that's fine. We all made it, and now there's a fire making challenge to, like, protect us, which I mean, sure, in the past a group of four could have always technically done that and force fire at four, but it's like it's even like less incentive to go against your alliance because there's like a completely like hands clean elimination at four.
Yeah, and I mean this is also the same argument people made against the final three versus the final two to begin with, where like it's a lot easier to keep a group of three or an alliance of three together in the final three season, obviously, because there's like, you know, even if there is an obvious pair or duo within that group of three, there's still not often going to be a circumstance where it like makes sense for them to split up. You can even look at like Heroes versus Villains, where this was like what in theory the Russell Parv Danielle alliance should have been if Russell hadn't like, you know, had a freak out and like misunderstood the rules of Survivor. Like basically like threw away his and Parv's game for no reason. By like blindsiding Danielle, because like Russell in that season was afraid of Parv and Danielle being closer to each other than to him, which was true, but it didn't matter
because it didn't matter.
Because the show was a final three, and so all three of them could have and should have just gone to the end together. So
yeah, and like, you know, it takes a lot more, I don't know if talent's the right word, but a lot more savvy as a winner to put yourself in the position to where like I'm in the final three and both of these people think I'm taking them to the end and both of them are taking me to the end if they, you know, win themselves.
Yeah, it's, so we said it before, it's one of the only things that that Big Brother does better than Survivor at this point.
Yes. And sometimes it doesn't even matter because, you know, they don't cut each other and it doesn't even come back to bite them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we don't got to delve that deep into that. But it is like a very kind of unique skill within these games to be able to convince a single person to essentially like lose to you, right? It's always like really cool when it happens. Even if the person gets a lot of shit from the fan base over it.
Right.
But like it is like a very, very like it's a skill that like kind of pushes you from like an above average player to a truly great player.
Yeah. So Wu bringing Tony over Cass, still one of the wildest things that's ever happened on Survivor.
Yeah, and you don't get that in a final three season.
Yeah.
Or you don't really get the same. You can get it, but you don't. Or you at least could get it before fire making, but not to the same degree as a final two. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so please get rid of fire making, Jeff. I know you don't listen, and even if you did, you wouldn't listen to us because you think all your ideas are very good. I shouldn't say that. He's been, you know, him surviving. He's been a lot better this season listening to the fans. So I do just wish he would take away automatic fire making.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of the issues from like a break the game perspective in 44 like made them reevaluate stuff for 45, as we've talked about. So maybe if like the re before get to the end and be like, hey, there's no reason for us to turn on each other because the game ends at final four these days,
right?
And that'll be like the final awakening, and the producers will be like, oh wow, this is actually a negative.
We'll see. You gotta hope that it seems like it's a lost thing in Survivor these days, but like you still gotta hope that the money is enough to influence players at the end as it becomes more real. Because I feel like for the first two-thirds of Survivor, the $1 million prize is probably like an abstract concept. Well, you get down to six people, five people, it's right there, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, it is hard as well, because then you look at like a player like Jesse, and like we can also say like, you know, Jesse would have been voted at 3-1 in that circumstance without Fire, and you know, Fire at least gave him a chance. Yeah. But like he had to play the end game differently because Fire existed in a way that like made it less likely for him to make the ends. It also like was arguably like less interesting and was also a heavy contributor to that final three being extremely lackluster. So, I don't know. I think like overall, it doesn't accomplish what it was intended to accomplish. At least, you know, obviously it worked the first time because nobody was prepared for it in accomplishing what it was supposed to accomplish. But it's so easy to circumvent. And it also makes the game less interesting in terms of the way you have to play around it.
I wonder if, like, at a certain point, they're like, well, we can't immediately get rid of it because people will just, like, say that we rigged it for Ben. So which we have to keep it, which is true. Yeah, which they did do.
Yeah.
They did. But it's been long enough now to where it's like, it's fine. You can take it away. It's fine.
Yeah, we don't care. We're over the fact that the 35 was rigged for Ben. I don't care. Just, like, please fix the game.
We already had him come back to Winners of War and low-key kind of ruin the like end game of that season. So like that backfired on you, Survivor. That like was 100% your own, you know.
You think Devin Freitas would have done that? I don't think so.
Yeah, when he was in the final five and he's like, it's fine, you can vote me off. I want you to help for your own resume.
Mm-hmm.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Oh man. Anyways, yeah, no, so what do we think of the boys' night or boys' day, whatever?
I mean, the montage was fun. I like the Top Gun music,
It's so insane. But the
it was like, yeah, I mean, it was like, you know what was interesting to me? Okay, I'm pretty sure, like, Drew is just bullshitting at this point, right? Because, like, in episode one, he has this whole thing where he's like, there's Drew and there's Basile, and, you know, Basile is like this frat boy, you know, like people aren't going to see, like, you know, I see that side of me coming. And here he's like, I've never growed out before. I've never, you know, I've only anthropologically studied the concept of growing out.
Yeah. He wanted to be conquered so bad in that.
Yeah. And it's like, pick a lane. Like, are you the guy using $1 SAT words to describe how nerdy you are? Or are you like secretly a frat bro? Because right now you're trying to be both, and it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Because if you're a frat bro, like if you're an actual frat bro, you've like objectively broed out before.
Yes.
Like, either you're lying now, or you were lying then.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. You gotta be consistent in your own character, even if it's a made up character.
Yeah.
For Survivor, and like I said, Cochran. That confessional coming from Cochran, I believe it. You know, I believe that he's never broed out before. Or like, you know, there's been other players in previous seasons where it's like, yeah, okay, I believe that. But yeah, I mean, he's also what, like 6'6" or 6'7"? Like, I don't know. I feel like tall guys just like, you know, are always around in bro packs, you know?
They gotta have one, you know?
Yeah, they gotta have one freakishly tall guy.
Yeah. So you can win the pickup games against the other bro groups in the local gyms. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like in Silicon Valley, and it's like all the programmers self like put into their groups. That's you know, all the bros have to have one giant, you know, one like absurdly jacked guy. Mm-hmm. One tall guy, like one, just one, like
one token, you know, Asian guy.
Yeah, yeah, one Asian guy. Like, you know, it's just, yeah, it's just, you gotta do it.
Yeah. No, that's funny. But yeah, I also like, you know, I don't know, I feel like even if you're like a nerdy guy, you know, like I feel like every like straight dude is broed out, like even if you're super nerdy. So like, this is bullshit.
I agree.
Yeah, he's just trying to, like, you know, play a character for the TV. Yeah. It's like, okay.
Yeah, you're telling me Drew didn't like have, you know, at least nights of drinking beer and playing Super Smash Bros. On a GameCube in college. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that for one second.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man.
Mm-hmm. The Sword of Damocles.
Oh man. Yeah, so I think that was just a very fun, like, for an episode that was very, not very straightforward, but like nothing game changing happened in it. It was a nice like moment.
Yeah, no, obviously, like, you know, Bruce going home with an idol in his pocket was like a big deal, but in terms of like shaking up the macro game that's going on, it wasn't like a huge shakeup.
Like, yeah, it's like Jake, Bruce.
Yeah, there's not been much of a big difference.
Yeah, exactly. I guess for me personally, since he's my winner pick, happy Jake stayed, but it wasn't, you know.
Yeah, it allows us to have three lawyers in the final seven.
That's something. Yeah.
It's interesting. We got like an entire tribal council, like, panned to every single lawyer. When Jake being a lawyer was brought up, just to be like them not in the law, like, yeah, I agree with that as a lawyer.
Imposter syndrome, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, imposter syndrome, yeah.
Which I'm sure it does. And like, let's be real, feeling like you're inadequate as a lawyer actually has very bad real world repercussions. Like, feeling you're, you know, so, as a podcaster, feeling imposter syndrome, whatever, like, doesn't negatively affect the world at all. As a lawyer, if you're like defending somebody and like, oh man, I'm not sure I'm good enough at this, that's not what you want to hear from your lawyer.
Yeah, take a look at my lawyer, dog. He's bad at Survivor.
Yeah,
I'm going to jail.
You gotta make that a meme. Like, this is my lawyer, dog. I'm going to jail.
Yeah.
No, that's too mean.
Yeah. No, but it's, you know, I guess, like, the big thing that Bruce leaving instead of Jake in this episode sets up is, like, maybe it's, like, marginally more likely that something can play out because, like, Jake and Katura could work together, and I don't think, like, Bruce could have worked with either of them ever. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, maybe we finally created a contingency of Bellows that can you know, potentially work together when it's like two of them left.
Just it's, them.
It's still probably a coin flip.
Yeah. And really, like, the two who, because they couldn't work together, basically ended all of the Bellows games.
Yeah.
Now that everyone else is gone, they're like, oh, maybe we can get together, make something happen.
Yeah, it's, you know, Bruce, who I think was really not good at Survivor, and I still stand by my take that Bruce is a first boot who, like, bumblefucked his way to eighth place somehow. Mm-hmm. Just by circumstance of him, like, being immune for basically the whole game.
Yeah.
He even was able to correctly surmise that he could, like, give info to Jake, and Jake would, like, ferret it back to the Rebuzz in, like, fucking 5 seconds flat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So, what do you think, speaking of Jake, what do you think of his fight here in this episode?
It was great. I mean, it's great TV. Yeah. Really horrible Survivor. Like, Jake this episode is so bad. Like, he's not good. He's
just, yeah.
I mean, look, I said before, like, the reason everyone was, like, dick riding Kelly so hard as a fan was because she was, like, the only, like, average player on a tribe full of, like, some of the worst Survivor players I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm. Like, all and of I get, so like, bad. I definitely get his frustration of just being, like, on the bottom and also just not even considered as, like, a player, basically. Yeah. It's like the game's happening around him and he just can't get into it at all, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, people are fucking, like, double dutching and he's, like, on the sidelines, like, oh, can I get in there? And, like, now no one's letting him in.
Yeah, well, my issue with Jake is he gets information and then he immediately squanders it in the worst way possible.
Yeah.
So, like, here, like, Emily's actually feeding him good information. And he's like, okay, I'm going to, like, make an emotional, like, I need to make a play. But instead of, like, thinking about, well, like, what's the best strategic play I can make with this information, he, like, immediately makes, like, an emotional play because he's upset about the information that he's received. That's, like, my read, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, he just has no idea what to do with, like, anything. And, yeah, it would have been interesting to see how his game would have played out had he been able to keep Caleb. And then he was, like, calling the shots. But it's just so impossibly out of his hands at this point that, like, he is literally just hoping that someone comes and tells him what to do, like Emily did this episode.
Yeah, I think that, like, you know, Is there a possibility that he is, like, utilized by Emily as, like, an additional vote in, like, facilitating this, like, you know, upcoming Reba Civil War? I think that's possible, and I think that, like, maybe he's even able to, like, catapult himself into the final three with that kind of a strategy. But, like, he's not going to get any jury votes. Like, even though the jury is rooting for him, I think, like, his best case scenario is, like, pretty much only tied to him getting there with somebody like Emily, who I think the jury would reward way more handsomely over him. Like, maybe he gets Kendra. I don't know. Like, who's going to vote for him?
I don't know.
Yeah.
And would it even be, like, the only, like, Caleb would if Emily weren't there, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, because Caleb may at least appreciate that Jake was trying to save him.
Yeah, it's definitely
But Emily literally did save him earlier in the game and then gave him the info to save himself with the shot in the dark. So he, like, way, way, way more would vote for Emily than Jake.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, too. Like, I just don't see – I don't see a path where Jake gets to a favorable final three at this point. And, I just don't really – even, like, the unfavorable final threes, I think, are, like, a major long shot at this point. Mm-hmm. But maybe it will happen. I think it only happens if, you know, the preview isn't just, like, debating us as it almost always does. And there is, like, a civil war and Drew and Julie go after each other next week. But, you know, preview generally is trying to mislead us to create tension. So it's probably not going to happen. So more likely than not, Jake is just going to, you know, fourth time's the charm and finally get voted out.
You know, what can you do? That's you. That's, I don't know if you saw Kendra. Yeah, that's live. But Kendra, I don't know who it was for. Maybe like Dalton Ross or Mike Bloom, but it was like a word association. And for Jake, she said baby girl. That's, you know, that's just what he's become. Like, even in the fandom, everyone's just like, oh, Jake. Like, mm-hmm. So adorable. Like, trying to play Survivor and not being able to.
Yeah.
I think I saw Owen, like, drew the Charlie Brown shirt on Jake. It was like, welcome to the club.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anyone would know how it feels, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, it sucks to be, that, like, because it is a position that people find themselves in pretty frequently on Survivor, when they're just, like, they're basically just drawing dead and just, like, painfully waiting to lose. And like everything they do is just gonna like almost always fail, and they're just kind of just on somebody else's timetable as to like when they get to leave the game.
The one very unfortunate thing about Survivor is like when you're in that position, there's just almost literally nothing you can do. Find an idol, maybe, but that's it. Like, there's no way you can ever get power back.
Yeah, I guess if they rehide Bruce's idol, which they should definitely not do, but you never know.
It's late into the game with two hearts still in the game. That'd be a lot. And I also think that because, you know, Jemiah went out in the Mergatory and then like Kelly went out soon, I almost feel like they didn't hide a merge idol because they're like, ooh, we can't have four idols potentially, you know, deep into the game, and they just kind of treated the amulet as the merge idol.
That makes sense, I think.
We've been there. We've all been there as anyone who's run an LRG where you're doing the mental math of like, are there too many idols in this game? I'll even say one of the times I went and took the idol out of the game that was hidden for a few rounds because I did not want to end up in a Cerise situation.
Yeah, no, I think it's a smart thing to keep in mind from a production standpoint. So I mean, at this point, like assuming that Julie gave the idol back, like that was like touched upon in the previously on, but never really like fully followed up. Assuming she gave it back to Austin has the only two idols slash advantages even in the game at this point.
And also probably one of the better chances to win immunity.
Especially with Bruce gone now. Yeah. Bruce going out is a huge boon to Austin in terms of his, like, all he has to do is win one out of the next three immunities and he's in fire making, guaranteed. Or he just has to not get blindsided or, like, you know, not be forced. Like, it would be, like I said earlier, it would be insane for him not to make Final Four at this point. It would be a huge blunder on his part. But it would be needed.
Yeah, and by winning immunity, he's, like, fulfilled his archetype, right? Like, the, you know, jockish, I don't want to say dumb, but, you know, like, the jockish, like, surfer bro character who wins immunity challenges.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not dumb. He solved the math puzzle, so
yeah, exactly. And didn't he go to like a really good school as well?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely like not dumb. Like, you know, I don't know what school he went to, but like he's for sure not dumb. He has like kind of the, I think he's got like a Tyler Crispin upside where he's just having long hair makes people think you're stupid.
So I mean, good for him winning this challenge, and good for Emily for actually making a mark on the season and adding something to her resume. I know people are disappointed that there wasn't, you know, a blind side on the Reba 4, but you can only make the moves that like other players are willing to make with you, and those Bellas weren't willing to work together, so what was Emily supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah, she's like a pretty solid player. She's not a miracle worker, right? Like, you know, Keturah literally, like, Keturah and Jake both just, like, snitched out Bruce, like, basically as quickly as humanly possible. Like, it was just not, the cards were not there. Yeah, it's a lot better to take an obvious vote and, like, make it your own.
Yeah. We talked about it last week, like, the worst thing for game bot type players is the players who won't do what's in their best interest. But luckily, she was able to use these players who work against their own best interest to her own advantage by just going with their, you know, instincts to sabotage themselves.
Yeah. And in the process, like, you know, I do think each round, the Rebus have taken out the, like, the least incompetent member of Bellow that's left, which is hilarious that Kendra is the second least incompetent of the five. But I think that is the Katara case.
Katara next episode, and then Jake. I
think Katara has more openly sabotaged her own game than Jake has. But it's close.
That's fair.
Yeah. It's definitely close. They're like kind of neck and neck. But yeah. I do think that, like, you know, Bruce was the only one of the three Bellows that came up with a cogent plan that made sense. And so he had to go.
Yep. Oh man, it's the what's the like the tallest flower gets plucked.
the tallest grass gets mowed down, whatever. Yeah.
Oh man. So Bruce, very fun character. Glad he got a second chance. It was funny that on his way out, he's like, you know, this was such a great experience for my second time. It's like, yes, Bruce. Yep, your second time.
Yeah, we know. it was hard pressed to be worse.
Yeah. Oh man.
Pretty much impossible to. They could have still voted you out first, and it would have been better.
Yeah. He could have, you know, got medevaced going off the boat, I guess.
Yeah. I guess.
That would have been the only thing.
Yeah, he could have heard Emily shit talking him on the mat and had like a heart attack or something, I guess.
Yeah. Right. It's just
the only way it could have been worse.
Oh man. So yeah, anything else for this episode or
No, I think that I think this felt coronation-y for Emily. I hope it was, because I think like her story this episode and this season has been really, really, really good. Mm. For a show that gets like heavily criticized for good reason, for not doing a great job at like telling the story of female winners. If Emily is the winner, I think that they've told her story really well, like pretty much as well as you could hope to. So,
yeah.
We've said that in the past about players that didn't go on to win. You have like your Lauren Ashley Bex, for instance.
You're right.
Kelly Wentworth 2.0s. There's a lot of women who had like really good stories, and it would have been good winner stories, and they didn't end up winning. So we'll see, I guess. I think that a lot of people are giving her unwarranted shit for like not turning on Reuben now. So I don't know. Maybe I'm a fanboy, but I think it's fine. I think she's like at least locked into five. At this point in Survivor history, like locked into five is pretty much like the best you can hope for. And like locked into five not being the like number one threat, I think is like the most you can hope for. And I think that people are overlooking her as a threat. Her name does not come up at all. Dee's gets brought up a lot. Drew's has started to get brought up. Julie even got brought up a lot this episode as a threat in terms of like a social threat. But Emily and Austin are like the two that like consistently kind of seem to float under the radar as potential jury threats and potential winner threats. So those are the two people I'm still looking at. I said it last week as like, I think it's probably Austin or Emily.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, probably no surprise of the podcast that we've already like said, like, yeah, we're kind of like game bot ish people. are super behind the most game bodish person on paper, anyways. She certainly had a lot of like personal growth.
Yeah, I mean, even this episode, she got like some good personal content. We finally got to learn a little bit more about, you know, her as a person outside the game, as other than like, you know, her just having like really bad first impressions and a negative attitude sometimes. I think, like, you know, people are saying the season's getting boring because it's up a ganging. It's, you know, if anything, blame the way that they've structured the post-merge, because it kind of led to that by them not really having early merge votes that that could have potentially given people space to split up the Reba 4. But I do think it's also a testament to the Reba 4 basically like snowing. Well, it's a testament to the Reba 4 snowing people, which they somehow continue to do. Like, it's as we've mentioned before, very Kagi-esque. You know, I'll believe that there's an alliance if they vote together one more time, where they keep like convincing, like Jake was like blindsided this episode that Drew wasn't his bestie.
Yeah, right.
so ridiculous. Also, yeah, as we mentioned, Bello members are really bad.
That's what softens it for me. It's like, well, like, it's Bello's fault at every turn. Like, yeah, they did this to themselves.
Yeah, like, they're the most unrootable underdogs ever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like they get screwed by production or anything. They just are bad at Survivor and are getting, now, I don't know if saying they're getting what they deserve, right? But they're getting what I'm fine with them getting.
Yeah, no, they're like getting Pagong in a very similar way to Pagong originally had happened to them. Like, where Tagi were just blatantly way better at the game in every way. And like, the better players are going to win, you know, the vast majority of the time. That's how Survivor works. Yeah. I don't know, but if people want to watch bad players like succeed, like, you know, then you get BB25. Like, what do you want?
Oh, man. Well, hopefully we don't have any final jury speeches like, guess what? I did rock, paper, scissors. That's why I was up there.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would much rather... Like, this is also, like, I really liked 44. Like, I didn't, like, love 44, and I also, you know, was a big Carolyn fan. I thought I was disappointed she only got zero votes at the end. Like, obviously, Jim Jim is a very deserving winner, but, like, this is, like, basically the same idea of, like, the Tika 3, where, like, they just fucking annihilated everyone that emerged from, like, top to bottom. And, like, did it create, like, kind of a boring strategic endgame? Yeah, but it was, like, a really fun story. I think it's a similar thing here, where like the Reba 4 are like a really fun alliance to even to like love to hate. I definitely love to hate Drew. I think he's a really fun villain.
Agreed. Man, well, that's all I got. You want to promote anything? Where can they find you online? All that.
Yeah, you can find me, you know, on Twitter, at Ben Sharon. You know, I guess, I've usually been trying to promote Devil's Plan. I know you
recently binged. Yeah, I used the Thanksgiving break to watch all of it in very quick succession because I watched a few episodes and I was instantly hooked. It was as good as you advertised it to be. Just an incredible reality show. And I hope, you said they're going to do season two. I hope it just stays on and we get tons of seasons because it was just so unique and so like well thought out and such interesting challenges and characters, and like the characters played in a way at certain points that I don't think anyone expected, including production. And it was very interesting to see, not like them break the game because the game wasn't like established in any way, but to kind of like play in an unexpected way that made for a really compelling season.
Like subvert the game, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, like I've tweeted out, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I have like a short tweet thread down there of like my spoiled thoughts on the season. So watch the show first if you don't want to get spoiled.
And some of the most compelling reality TV characters I've ever seen.
Yeah, 100%. Like, very, like, really good cast top to bottom. Like, pretty much no duds, in my opinion. Like,
no.
I think, like, maybe you could argue one to two, but, like, even they, like, contributed, you know, their fill to the story as, like, side characters. Yeah, really, really compelling, you know, story, narrative, endgame winner across the board. Like, everything, like, flowed really well. So, really excited for season two. I'm hoping that you, this has inspired you to dive into The Genius, and I'm very excited to hear your thoughts on that.
So. Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's not, dubbed, right? It's only sub.
It's subbed.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I prefer subbed, at least for these games. Like I think the dubs were kind of unnatural in Devil's Plan. And I think in general, they're unnatural. And I also think like the subbed version of The Genius that is out there is really good at not only just subbing what's being said, but also like giving a lot of context for what's going on the screen and the games, like giving backstory on some of these players, because most of them are like pseudo celebrities or like people who are semi well known within Korea. So like giving American viewers or Western viewers more context on who these people are.
That's kind of the thing too about Devil's Plan is like they're all, like you said, celebrities or at least like very accomplished people. Mm-hmm. Even like, you know, the person who's like the student is like, you find out, oh, he's actually like a pro poker player who's won like multiple tournaments, and it's like, damn, okay, like everyone's like so successful on this and so like driven to win.
Yeah, and also like the one of the selling points for him was like they do like a mental exam for all of the players in casting, and he was like he had a second highest score of anybody in casting or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, and he was awesome. Yeah. I really enjoyed him as a character. So, yeah, and if you're a reality TV fan, you're gonna love The Devil's Plan.
Yeah, it's like candy for reality TV, like, you know, elimination style, like social strategy game, you know, fans. So.
Yeah, it really has everything. And so, yes, please go check it out, and please make more stuff like that, just general to producers anywhere. Hire Ben and I to design your games. We will make great social strategy games for you.
Yeah, this is our, like, we've spent, you know, two decades plus of our life, you know, watching and, you know, thinking about these games and like playing in fan-made versions of them way too much, and designing games ourselves and being like, you know, being able to immediately call out when something is broken or when something is wrong.
Right.
And yeah, like I fucking love these games, and The Genius and Devil's Plan are like the fine wine, in my opinion, of social strategy games. I hope they keep making The Devil's Plan. I hope it would be insane. I think it's unlikely, but I think it would be insane if they made an American version, or like at least an English speaking version somewhere.
Yeah, if you need podcasters on that cast, hit us up for the American version of The Devil's Plan. It really did inspire me. Like, you know, I won't get too into it, but we've talked offline. Like, we're going to make our own social strategy game. Like, it's something that we've talked about in the past for a long time. But after watching Devil's Plan, I was like, we got to do it, because like, you know, it reinvigorated my love for these. Not that Survivor, you know, Survivor's my first love, of course. You're always going to, you know, be in love with your first love, you know, of reality games. You're always going to put it on a pedestal, if you will. But, like, watching Devil's Plan was the same feeling as, like, the first time I saw Survivor or Big Brother, where I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. Like, and you know what's really funny? A lot of people are, for the very first time, watching a social strategy game with the Squid Game, the challenge, and not reacting in the same way that I did. A lot of people are like, what the fuck is this? Like, which, you know, have to do some self-evaluation, I guess.
Yeah, I have not checked it out yet. I've heard like very mixed reviews is the best way I'll put it on it. But yeah, no, definitely, like, if you have Netflix and you want a social strategy game to watch, you know, definitely check out Devil's Plan first, and then when you know if you can't find the Seasons of the Genius online, then you know I guess at that point you know you kind of have to settle for a Squid Game, whatever it's called, the Squid Game challenge. But yeah,
it's so funny because like people are like, I can't believe this person did this thing, and like I see it, I'm like, I mean that seems reasonable to me in a $4 million game to do that. Like, I'm sorry, you're all so soft. Like these people are trying to win $4 million, like, and everyone signed up for it. Okay, like everyone knew what they were getting into. So like, I don't feel bad for anyone losing in a dumb way on, you know, the fucking challenge version of Squid Game. Like, and I'm not mad if anyone is kind of an asshole or like betraying people on it either, because $4 million. And again, it's a game. Like, everyone signed up for it knowing it was a game. They don't really die. It's fine.
Well, I did see there was potential of a lawsuit over, like, permanent nerve damage.
So, okay, but here's the thing with that. One, Tom from Palau got permanent nerve damage on Survivor.
That is true.
Immunity challenge.
Yeah.
You go on to this show, and they probably make you sign 8 billion pages of her.
Oh yeah, no, they're not winning the lawsuit. I'm just saying that, like, you know, I don't feel bad at people getting betrayed or getting screwed by twists, but I definitely feel bad if people got permanent nerve damage.
Yeah, no, I mean it's not great, but like, you gotta get permanent nerve damage to try to win $4 million. Sometimes I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess that's.
Yeah, did they not watch the original Squid Games? Like that's the least of their worries.
There wasn't a little bit in the back of your mind like, maybe I am going to die on this show. Maybe it's like a big ruse to just kill 400 people. I don't know. But yeah, no, it sucks, obviously, that happened. And maybe the production wasn't as put together as they should have been.
Yeah, it was overambitious, I would say, is the most the nicest way I could put it.
That's why, like, a lot of games start off with like 12 contestants, you know, like Big Brother. They had what, 12 or 13 in their first season, not 400.
Yeah, I just like logistically, from like a television perspective, it makes no sense to have. Like, I know obviously they're trying to be, you know, they're trying to be true to the Squid Game story, but like, it doesn't make any sense to like, yeah, because you're literally just like putting 375 of those people are just, nobody's going to know who they are at all. Yeah. Like you're obviously going to only focus on 25 people at most. So like, what's the point? Like you're putting these people through all this, and you're like paying all these people a stipend, presumably.
No, actually, one of the Squid Games people said that they didn't get paid.
Was that? I thought that was
crazy.
Was that a real thing? Because I saw Zach Wurtenberger like meme about that, but I didn't know if that was a real thing.
No, I saw someone I assume who was actually on the show, not Zach, even though he's pretending to have been on the show, which is hilarious. Saying that, like, no, there's just like, you know, a contest without like a stipend, which is crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. Well, I guess in that case, you know, that's how they afforded to have 400 contestants.
Yeah,
because
that's the thing too. Like, if I was trying to get on a reality show and they were like, "Oh, you know, you're not getting paid at all," I'd be like, "Oh no, I'm not doing that."
Yeah,
are you crazy. That's so dumb.
Yeah, no, yeah, 100%. Like, you got to know your worth as a person. You know, like,
I'm trying to bring character, drama, all that to the show. I'm trying to help the show as much as possible. I'm not doing this shit for free.
Yeah, at least like get, you know, like the minimum payment that like an extra would get.
Yeah, I mean? Right. $1,000 a week, I think, is like reasonable what Big Brother does.
Yeah, no, I think like I don't know how long they filmed for, but like even like $1,000 flat for like all of the losers, I think is like, is it good? No. Is it like, you know, probably within the industry like a reasonable amount? Yes.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, very crazy, but very funny to watch a bunch of people discover social strategy games and have visceral, like, negative reactions to it.
Yeah, because they're watching the wrong ones. So
yeah, yeah. I just, like, my whole thing is people are like, oh, it's like, you know, demeaning or like, what's something exploitative? People say that it's exploitative, and it is. So is life.
Yeah,
like fucking. I've been super demeaned at the jobs I've worked in life. I've been super exploited and embarrassed by capitalism at large. So, like, sorry, I don't feel bad about people being exploited for a game show.
Yeah, not 100%.
But that's just life, and it sucks, but it is what it is.
Yeah, no, Ellie, if people are going to be, like, you know, exploited and manipulated, at least, like, you know, make a good content for the rest of us.
Yeah,
like, not exactly. Just, like, do it, like, quietly behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or at least people, for me, when I was being yelled at about pizza or chickens, you know.
Yeah, that would have been a great, like, candid camera, you know.
Yeah. I would have been killing it in those confessionals, saying real mean things about the customers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. People are just soft.
No, I agree. I think, like, you know, I think that it played, like, there was a level of that as well with the contestants on the Devil's Plan, but it played out in a really interesting way. Mm-hmm. And, like, it made for a compelling TV. But, you know, for our viewers, there's definitely, like, a level of softness as well. And this is also something that happened in, like, the British version of The Circle. Where, like, the UK audience as a whole is just not as, you know,
coded. You don't like games, right?
Yeah, they don't like games. They like popularity contests, and they don't like when their favorites lose because they are bad at the game.
I feel like Americans are a little in the middle. I feel like South Koreans are, like, super, like, game oriented, at least from what I've, like, seen from their games. Which is why I think I really like the South Korean version of these games, because it's all about, you know, the strategy of the game and doing what you can for yourself to win. And then Americans are, like, pretty split, where it's like a lot of us are freaks and we love this shit. And then there's a lot of people who are like, this is abhorrent.
Yeah. I'm so mad that Caleb lost when he was, like, pretty objectively not that great at Survivor.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone got screwed. I cannot believe Sifu got screwed by being dog shit a Survivor.
Yeah, I mean, we say it all the time specifically about Big Brother, but, like, it goes for Survivors. Like, no one ever said these games were fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, look, it's honestly, like, this is one of the more fair seasons of Survivor
in a
long time. Like, pretty much everyone who's lost has lost for, like, a legitimate reason, and it's because they're really not great at Survivor.
Right. Oh, man.
This whole cast is bad at Survivor, just across the board. Right. Really, really, really not that great. The Rima 4 are, like, replacement level players, like, slightly better than replacement level players. And they're just, like, running circles around these morons. So, yeah.
All right, so go watch The Devil's Plan, everyone, and stay tuned for our social strategy show. That's going to come sooner than later, hopefully.
Almost a decade in the making. We've been talking about this since, like, 2014, 2015.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a shout out to my community college biology class for being so boring and for me to be starting to plan a reality game in the back of the classroom.
Yeah, the first time Brian and I talked about this game was when we were applying for the 2930 series of Survivor. We were basically, like, we met Dan Foley in line. When he got cast for Worlds Apart, because we were also applying for that that season.
Yep. Which, yeah, very insane that that happened, especially because I distinctly remember us walking away and being like, yeah, that guy's never getting on Survivor.
Yeah, no, we said the same thing about, or at least I said the same thing about Kevin Schluber and BB19 casting.
Yeah, so if you see Ben and I at your open casting call, just know there's a chance you could get on the season.
Especially if you're like an older dude who, like, we just assume is never going to get cast.
Pretty much
a lock at that point. Two for two.
We should go to another open casting call and make content around it. You know,
that could be fun.
Yeah, so we'll see. But yes, thank you so much for watching. Subscribe to all our channels as always, and we'll see you in the next one.